Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. As always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at AH Malcolm on Twitter, of course, RedState.com. Also on Instagram, although I think most of what you do is basically on Twitter. Right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Almost everything, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So it's either Twitter or X, or RedState.com. It's been a rough few days, I think, for those of us in the media and politics field. Charlie Kirk was assassinated really the day after we did our last podcast, right? I mean, it was the next day. And kind of going through it for the last several days here. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, of course, it's tragic. Something like this felt inevitable, and sadly, the feeling was accurate. After two attempts on Trump, it's just, I mean, thank God he missed it. Can you imagine the state of the country if something had happened to him at Butler? I mean, we'd have, besides the anger, we'd have had the other ticket. But it's one of those events, and this is, I know we're going to talk about the column, but in the column, I mentioned that it might have seemed like a rant, but it wasn't, or cynical, but it wasn't, because after six decades of observing and writing about these things, I just get sick and tired and angry that we're not really addressing the issue. I mean, people are going to argue about the rhetoric and who said what when. It's mental health. I mean, bottom line, it's mental health, but it's such an awkward thing that you don't talk about it. Nobody faces the issue. Most of the violent shootings, and it seems like we're finding out about this one now, most of the violent shooters gave signs beforehand that they were going to do something. And the people around them, or even the police, they didn't do anything. They denied their fear. These people have even talked about it. And, you know, remember the Parkland school shooter? He had 69 documented incidents of violence and violent threats. And he was still out walking around shooting neighbors' pets.
Yeah.
And the police knew about him. The school expelled him. He had been in mental health counseling. But, you know, the law says, well, you can only keep them 48 hours. You can hardly spell their name in 48 hours when you're dealing with mental health. But this is such a tender issue. Back in the 80s, I wrote about the right to die and people choosing to die. And boy, that was a sensitive thing. And now they have hospice where people said, okay, that's enough. I don't want to... We can keep my body going a lot longer than I want to be in it. And so there is hope that things will change. But in the meantime, innocent people like that poor woman in Charlotte, they end up dead. They never even knew what hit them. And it's just sickening. And of course, it was a big name, big person, important person who was killed last week. But this is happening way too much. You know, I mean,
I think the difference is that I'm not excusing taking shots at politicians, right? You had two assassination attempts on Trump. Charlie Kirk wasn't a politician, right? He was just a guy who wanted to, he's a guy on the radio. He's a guy who was, his whole thing was going to have debates and conversations with people. All he wanted to do was go talk to people and open up the conversation, right? And
but he was associated with a political movement, and that was good enough to off him. Yes, violent language is hurtful. Calling people Nazis. I mean, there's few things more ridiculous than Schumer calling people Nazis. It's just ridiculous. And it indicates, I mean, Schumer's Jewish and he's calling Trump Nazi? Come on, get serious. That shows he doesn't even know what a Nazi is. It's just... But that's not the reason that people get killed. People get killed because they're sick in the head. I'm sorry, but you put it that way. And people don't want to face it because, oh, they have civil rights. Well, so did the victims have civil rights, and they lost them. And nobody can get them back. So if there's the slightest suspicion, people ought to be sequestered and analyzed, and you can't do that in 48 hours. It's just too risky to have them out on the street. That guy in Charlotte, he had 14 arrests, most of them violent, and the judge let him out. Well, he's a black man
without bail. Yeah,
no bail. He's a black man, so he gets a second chance. But the poor immigrant who was working the night shift to try to make a new life in America, she didn't get a second chance. So, you know, if I was that newspaper there, I would be going back and finding out all of the judges that let that guy out and publishing their names. If he was in court and he said, someone, he couldn't identify who it was, gave him something that controls his actions.
Yeah, it's something in his body. He's got something in his body that is controlling his actions.
His actions. So he got charged with misuse of 911.
Yeah.
So that, if it doesn't take a legal scholar, if someone tells you that they were led to do something by a stranger putting something in their body, that's a pretty good sign that let's study this guy some more, because we can't have him out on the street. What if that powerful powerful element in his body makes him kill somebody? And it did. She's dead. I mean, it's just a 23-year-old beautiful woman escaped the war in Ukraine to come here and build a new life in peace. It's just awful. It makes you sick. And there's a lot of things that make us sick these days. But when we can do something, instead of saying, let's have a national conversation. No, national conversations don't do anything. They just don't do anything except talk. We don't know how to listen to each other anymore. I said national conversations don't work because they're just talking.
I'm kidding around.
I'm sorry. I'm kidding around. duh. Malcolm missed that one.
Yes. And I have thoughts on that. Now, this is Andrew's column yesterday, as we're recording this, Facing American National Conversations Are Just Not the Answer Anymore. And I have two thoughts about this. First off, you're absolutely right. I have two thoughts as to why that is. Number one, these were never conversations. These were lectures from one side, right? It was always the left that wanted to have a conversation about race, a conversation about, you know, sexuality, a conversation. Basically, the conversation was, this is the way we want it. And shut up. So they're never conversations. But the problem with this idea, and the reason, let me back up. The reason why that is that I was just talking to Seth Liebson about this. This, and I wrote about it too today, in regards to some remarks that Amy Coney Barrett made on Hugh Hewitt's show. Good remarks. I'm not criticizing her remarks. I just don't think it went deep enough. The problem is that people have been formed in an educational system that has abandoned education for indoctrination. And they don't know how to have conversations anymore because these people are brought forward in an indoctrination system that prevents them from even accessing competing thoughts and values and ideas, right? They are they are barred from that experience to the point, and this started popping up a few years ago, when college students at certain colleges were confronted with competing values, they had to be, they called it triggering and traumatizing, and they had to retreat to safe rooms with stuffed animals and stuff like that to treat their trauma from being disagreed with at a university. Those are the people who are on Twitter right now cheering the death of somebody that they see as an enemy rather than just somebody whose ideas they disagree with. And it's not everybody who goes through these systems, but this is what the system is oriented to produce. They are not producing well-rounded, well-formed American men and women who can
listen.
Who can listen, right? Who can debate? Who can understand that there are competing ideas and that they should think very carefully about which ideas that they're going to embrace, and then learn what we in the religious realm would call apologetics, right? You know, and this is not apologizing for your religion, by the way. For people who hear apologetics, this doesn't mean I'm Catholic and I'm sorry. That's not what that means. Now, maybe I'm sorry is actually a pretty fundamental part of Christianity and Catholicism. We are supposed to do this on a fairly regular basis by going to the priest and going, you know, here's my laundry list of things that I am sorry for right now. But that's not what apologetics are. Apologetics are the explanations of faith and the defenses of the tenets of faith. And so if you're formed in that sense, then you learn to encounter other points of view. This is a key part of evangelism, I would argue, for any religion, but, you know, Christianity, Catholicism, particularly. You have to make sure, you have to make yourself aware of the competing arguments, the competing values, and you have to present a well-rounded and appealing argument to contradict them or to defend your own tenets and values. And I will say this, most Catholics don't know how to do that either. Most Christians don't know how to do that either, because most of them aren't really called to do it. But I would argue that the education system in the United States over the last 60 years, and particularly maybe the last 30, is forming people exactly the opposite of being able to have those skills. They don't have those skills. Those skills are not rewarded. Anybody who brings in a contradictory thought into those environments is quashed pretty heavily, to the point where parents are just simply removing their children from these school systems and either homeschooling them or sending them to private schools that will give them an education rather than an indoctrination. So this is a reason why we have this. And at the end of my long rant, I'm going to hand it back to you. You tell me where I'm wrong and see if you were listening. I'm checking to see if you were listening.
You're not wrong at all. I agree with you 100%. My education, it wasn't religious, but when I was in journalism school and during the 60s, for instance, in critical writing, was teaching us to write critically, thoughtfully, not just rotely, which is what's doing today. And so the assignment, I thought this was so clever, the assignment was to go and review something, a movie, a play, I picked a play, an orchestra, whatever. And most people wrote a critical review of whatever it was, because those are easier to pick things apart.
And more fun. Let's face it, and more fun.
Yeah. And so you turned in the papers, he graded them and gave them back. And the next assignment was to write a review exactly the opposite of the one that he just graded. And that forced us to think another way. And that was routine in that was journalism school. And that was routine that you had to think, well, now, what am I missing? Why is this person telling me this? How can I check this? It was all critical thinking. You're right, Ed. Sadly, we're not getting it. We're not getting history either.
No, we're not getting history. We're not getting Western civilization. We're not getting foundational values from Western civilization because they've dumped that from education. You're not getting a classical education. You know, a while back, I wrote a review of a movie that had been out for 19 years called The Emperor's Club, which was, I think, a misunderstood film. It was marketed badly. I'll put it that way. Starred Kevin Kline. And it was really about, it was based on a short story called The Palace Thief, which was a very good short story, but it wasn't, or novella really closer to, but it was pretty depressing. We'll just say that the movie, they had to dress it up a little bit for the movie and turn it into sort of a celebration of great teachers sort of thing. The short story was a lot more cynical. But it was really about the undermining of classical education by contemporary values, right? For people who want to manipulate things. There's lots of different layers to this movie. It's a really good movie. Anybody who hasn't seen it or didn't read my essay on it, this is 2 or 3 years ago I wrote it and people were writing in the comments, why are you writing about this? Are you bored? Slow news day? But it was like, no. Well, yes, but no. Yes, I am bored. Yes, today was a slow news day. Still, I have a point to make here. And the point is that we're moving away from all of the things, all of the values, all of the structure that got us to where we're at or where we had arrived at to basically let the Goths into Rome and destroy it. I mean, that's kind of the point of the movie. It's really the point of the short story. To a certain extent, the point of the movie as well. Really good movie. I want to talk a little bit about the media reaction to this, though. Because did you see that the Washington Post fired one of their editors?
No.
Either yesterday or today? Karen Attia. Karen Attia went on, she went on her martyrdom tour on social media. She launched her own Substack. And I mean, she's got a picture of herself. I'm assuming it's Photoshop because I think it would have been dangerous to actually do this, but she's holding up a rolled up Washington Post that's on fire. She's got a flower in her mouth and she's standing in front of she's posed in front of the facade of the Washington Post. It's obviously Photoshop, but not a bad one either, by the way.
What is she murdered about?
She was fired because she was arguing that Charlie Kirk was basically awful and that we shouldn't be outraged over his death. It was like, well, I'm not saying that violence is good, but right, Charlie was awful. He was a bigot. He was this. And what happened was you had to dig way down into the Substack to see her Blue Sky post, where she supposedly quoted something that Charlie had said that said basically that Black women were intellectually inferior. Now, I'm not putting that in quotes because that wasn't exactly what was said, but she claimed that that was his argument, and she put it in quotes, in quotations, right? So that it was literally something Charlie said, and she said in his own words. Well, when you go check it out, that wasn't what he was saying. He was talking about Sheila Jackson Lee, Joy Reid, Michelle Obama to a lesser extent, and forget the fourth one. It'll come to me, but it was four women that he mentioned in this as being obvious beneficiaries of affirmative action, and that Ketanji Brown Jackson was the fourth, and who weren't really up to the jobs that they were holding, and you could tell that based on based on their public interactions. And now you can disagree with that, and that's fine, right? You can even say that that's kind of a nasty argument, and your mileage may vary on that. But he said something different than what she reported.
She and saw what Washington, she wanted to see. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't even give her that much credit. I think she deliberately did it so she could make her argument. I think she deliberately changed the quote so she could make her argument and strip the context out of it of talking about these four people in particular. And I dug it up. I dug up the actual clip from the radio show because, you know, he was on Salem Radio when he made that argument. And there's video of it. And it's very clear he's talking about particularly Sheila Jackson Lee. There's a clip of Sheila Jackson Lee talking about how she is bragging that she was affirmative action and Joy Reid bragging that she was affirmative action. That's, you know, and that's great because otherwise I wouldn't have got to where I was at. And he was like, yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
And so she got fired and she's claiming now martyrdom, journalistic martyrdom. I was just speaking truth to, you know, to power and the patriarchy.
She was an editor there?
She was an editor. Karen Atiyah. Yeah, she was one of the editors of the opinion pages. And I guess she was there for 11 years. So they fired her. Jeff Bezos fired her. And she's all over social media today claiming martyrdom. And a lot of people are pointing out, yeah, you lied. And they caught you lying. And actually, I'm shocked that the Washington Post even cared.
Yeah.
I was actually pleasantly surprised that there were consequences for this action. And this is the thing. It's what, you know, you can say whatever you want to say, but when you're operating in a free market and you've got employers and clients and you say stuff that's crazy.
With an internet. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, Those are the consequences of your actions. Those are the free market consequences of your actions. Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post, I figured, is it Will, who's the new
Will
editor
Lewis?
There?
Is it Lewis?
Will Lewis. I think that's right. Will Lewis. Will Lewis apparently didn't want to work with her anymore. Well,
okay.
That's just the consequences of your actions in a free market environment. And has nothing to do with whether you're going to have free speech or not. In fact, she went to Substack. She can have all the free speech she wants at Substack. She's just not getting the Washington Post funded anymore. And she's kind of pissed about that.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, what's your reaction? What are you seeing in the media? Well, because honestly, I think most of it's been terrible. The coverage of this has been terrible. And talk about how Charlie was a right-wing, you know, far-right guy. And so what? Yeah. All he was doing was trying to have a debate with people on college campuses, and they killed him for it. I mean, what does it matter?
Well, right wing is a code word in the mainstream media for extremist, and it isn't. So that's the what is it? The diminishment of language that, and you see it everywhere. I mean, the F word has now somehow become an adverb. I mean, to emphasize if something is very, is effing bad. Well, how did that happen? And how did somebody get into, I don't know what her education is, but how did she get, this woman get into an editorial position on the Washington Post, which was once the paragon of journalistic valor during and after Watergate, and that you and I have talked about this on our previous show, and that led to a whole generation of journalists coming in because Watergate and the Washington Post's exposure, which was magnificent journalism, was seen as fixing society. So thousands of, and the movie with Robert Redford, oh my gosh, I want to be in a movie with Robert Redford. So that became, I want to get into journalism to fix society. And therefore anything is okay to fix society for the greater good. So you can change quotes. You can call somebody names. You can be an extremist because you're fixing society, And that's not what journalism is. It's not what journalism was when I practiced it in the mainstream media in two major outlets for 4 decades. So it's sad that we've come to that. And honestly, Ed, I don't know how we're going to change it. I don't know how it's going to get reformed or fixed. I'm not sure it can be. But we're stuck with this polluted journalism presenting selected values, distorted values, distorted quotes, and people taking it as fact. It's just, you know, the New York Times had a story last night or maybe it was over the weekend, that Trump said he wasn't going to impose any more sanctions on Russia until Europe did. But that wasn't his whole argument. And if you went and looked at the video, as I did, of Trump's talking at the airport, he said so much more and so much more balanced and thoughtful. But the headline was all about as if, well, I'm not going to do it if you don't do it. That's not journalism. And that isn't the New York Times that I worked for 26 years.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of which, here's a great example of what I'm talking about. Hollywood Reporter yesterday had a headline out. Let me read the headline. MAGA blames South Park for Charlie Kirk's assassination as Comedy Central Pulse episode. Now, you and I are pretty much terminally online. Prince of Twitter. Have you heard anyone suggest that South Park in any way inspired or had a connection to Charlie Kirk's assassination? Because, it's the first I've even heard of the idea of this. And they quote Jesse Kelly on this. And he says, hey, THR and James Hibbard, there's a quote in this article supposedly from me. It's completely fabricated, as in you came up with it out of thin air. I don't even agree with the quote. It would be a good idea to retract and apologize right about now. And so they didn't retract. They didn't apologize. But the author, the reporter, James Hibbard, says, I added a note to the story. An early version of this article cited and linked a major media outlet quoting multiple conservative figures criticizing South Park over Kirk's killing. These quotes were denied on social media, and that outlet has since deleted these quotes. Once made aware of it, THR followed suit. But the tweet's still up with the original headline. They haven't withdrawn it.
Well, you know, I see Melania Trump got an apology and a retraction from the Daily Beast, which tied her to the Epstein file somehow. That's the only way we're going to fix things is to come at them full bore with lawyers. It doesn't seem subtle to me, but I guess it is in today's society. In the old days, which is when I was in mainstream journalism, you had time to do a story. You did a story in the daytime, or maybe rushed at night, but you did a story. You had time to research it, to get the other side, and then you wrote it because you knew it was going to be lasting. It was going to come out in the morning in the newspapers, and millions of people were going to read it, hopefully, or thousands anyway. It could be judged against the competition. So you wanted to have the most full story possible, comprehensive. Okay. Now that's not the criteria. The criteria is, will it get clicks? And will it get clicks? Well, balanced, nuanced, doesn't get the clicks that He's a Nazi does. And that's where the priorities have come online, where or television even, where people are getting their news. And so they're getting distorted. They're hearing something, like I just mentioned in the New York Times, that wasn't fully framed, properly framed, and they're taking that as reality. Well, it isn't anymore, or accurate reality. It isn't. And that's a real problem because it's pollution. It's hard to get all the plastic out of the ocean, and it's hard to get all the crap out of the online environment. And I like online. I love it. The instantaneousness of it. It's wonderful. You can go anywhere with it instantly. But it requires, it puts more responsibility on the user than it used to be. You know, it used to be you picked up the newspaper, and if it was a decent newspaper, you could trust what they said. And now you can't, because they're trying to fix things. Yeah.
Because they are reporting narratives rather than facts.
That's exact. There you go. That's it. Reporting narratives.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, go read Andrew's excellent column, Face It America, National Conversations Are Just Not the Answer Anymore, because nobody's listening. I'm not even listening to myself. What did I just say? I don't remember.
What do you know what that means?
I don't know. Hell knows what I'm saying. But that does bring us to the jokes of the week. I don't know if you've got one.
I got nothing on this week.
All right. I got one, because we have to let people off with, you know, some sort of lighthearted tone. Yeah. So I've got one for you. This is from jokesoftheday.net. I love that website. Go there all the time for mildly ribald humor. And this is one of those occasions here, Andrew. Man returns from the doctor and tells his wife that the doctor told him he's got only 24 hours to live. And given this prognosis, he asks his wife, "Hey, let's have sex. Let's, you know, I've only got, you know, a day. Let's have sex." So she says, "Oh, sure, of course." So they make love. About 6 hours later, the husband goes to his wife and says, "You know, I've only got 18 hours left. Can we go another time?" She says, "Oh, okay." So they do it again. Later, gets into bed and he's looking at his watch and says, "You know, I've only got about 10 hours left." He says, "Let's go one more time." So she says, "Well, all right." So they make love again. And then, you know, a couple hours after that, man says, "You know, it's midnight now. I've got 6 hours left. Let's go just one more time." And she looks at him. She says, "You know, I have to be up in the morning and you don't."
Yeah. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where that was going, but it turned out okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, a little ribald humor to take us out on this week's podcast. We'll be back with more jokes and hopefully some cheerier topics next week. But appreciate you being with us.
Ed can go to confession about that joke.
It's just added it to the list of things I have to apologize for. It just stretched out this far now. Yeah, that's not apologetics, but the apologies are really a big part of my religion. So, yes, there you go. All right.
Bless Andrew your heart, Malcolm, Edward.
Bless your heart. And Andrew is a big part of why I do what I do every single week. The Prince of Twitter is here at A.H. Malcolm on Twitter. He's at redstate.com, usually in the VIP section, but sometimes he posts his memory columns, and those are always outside the paywall. Go check those out. Andrew, thanks so much. We'll be back again next week.
We sure will. Thanks, Edward. Thanks, everybody. See you then.